I am the one. Entrepreneur Edition is brought to you by Try Business School. Get your free 5-part mini course on the 5 things successful entrepreneurs focus on. Visit iamtheone.fm/5 for access.
I'm Ed Fang, and I am the one.
Entrepreneur Edition, a show that explores the journeys of business owners who decided to be the one to make life better for the people they serve. I'm your host, Sonia Thompson, and today's guest is Ed Fang. Ed is the founder of The Power Rank, where he uses data and his own algorithm to make accurate football and March Madness predictions. During the 2015 college football season, Ed predicted the winner of 76.1% of the games, and from 2002 through 2015, his pre-tournament numbers predicted the winner of 71.4% of March Madness basketball games. We can learn a ton from Ed's experiences, in particular, his approach to building a business that suits the way he likes to work. Super important lesson. But before we dive into the interview, I want to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Try Business School, which is all about helping you become a successful entrepreneur by helping you create the right strategy to grow your business and giving you the resources you need to execute that plan. And to help you with that, I've got a free 5-part mini course for you that uncovers the 5 things successful entrepreneurs focus on. After interviewing more than 100 entrepreneurs, including several who've built multi-million dollar businesses, I've been able to whittle down the 5 things they focus on that fuels their success. So head on over to iamtheone.fm/5 to get access to this free mini course today. All right, let's get to it. Here's Ed. Hey, Ed, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, your business is fascinating, so I want to dive right into that. Tell me more about the Power Rank.
Yeah, so the Power Rank is about sports analytics, so to better understand sports. And sports, you know, range from football, basketball, baseball are kind of the 3 big ones that I cover on my site. These are obviously the ones that Americans are most interested in. And I started it because I had a background in doing quantitative analysis and data science. We can talk more about that a little bit later, but I just kind of had an idea about how to rank teams and how to predict the outcome of games. And this started back in 2008. And I cranked out some NFL rankings and sent an email to some friends. And that was kind of my MVP, my minimum viable product. And people were interested and they were like, oh yeah, this is cool, do more. So that's how everything got started.
So what is the specific problem that you saw for the people you serve?
Right. So in terms of for my paying members, I provide accurate quantitative predictions for people who need them. So these might be people who are gambling on games. Might be someone who's in a pool, you know, during football season. There are these weekly pools that you can get in, and whoever picks the most games wins that week. My customers are people who are getting into a March Madness pool and want not only the quantitative predictions that are most accurate, but also want the right strategy about how to win your pool. And those are actually 2 different things.
Okay.
So those are the people who are my paying customers, but I also serve people who are just curious about how data and analytics can better help you understand sports.
I think it's fascinating. And so maybe just a quick aside here, data and analytics can help you with sports, but what are your thoughts on data and analytics, period? Like, should we all be embracing the way that data and analytics in our everyday, specifically in our business?
Well, I mean, I think we do, right? I mean, you look at open rates for your emails, you look at, I mean, I do, I know you do. I mean, there's just various metrics that you rely on. So, you know, one of the things that I try to emphasize on my site is it's not all about the data. There's always kind of subjective adjustments. But the data is always a baseline that on which you need to check you know, any kind of intuitions or any kind of subjective analysis you have. So it's just, for instance, in your business, you know, if you had some ideas, like, all right, well, I don't know, I have a business blog, I've tried business school, and I'm going to write about chocolate. So that's my hypothesis. You want to check that with data and see that, well, are people opening up blog posts about chocolate? And, you know, the answer probably is no. So, I mean, that's just kind of an example. It's 2016. We really need, we have all this data. It's, and we should really use that. It should be kind of something you consult to validate ideas, to validate hypotheses.
Right. What would you say is the biggest mistake that you see people making with data whenever they do look at it?
Oh, golly. So the funnest thing I like to do is do this experiment with kindergartners, and I've done it with other age groups, but I'll go in and I'll have a white and a black chess piece, and I'll say, okay, well, this represents whether it's going to rain tomorrow. There's a 50% chance of rain, and there's a 50% chance of not rain. And I want you to tell me what you think that sequence of white and black chess pieces is going to look like. And inevitably, people will write down what they think it is, and there'll be it'll essentially look black, white, maybe black, black, white, white, something like that. And when we actually do the experiment, we'll go around the class and we'll have people pick out chess pieces out of the bag, and we'll see that there are many more streaks in the sequence of white and black chess pieces than you would ever expect. So I've never done the experiment and had a streak less than five. I had some eighth graders pulled out 9 straight white chess pieces, and they thought it was a magic trick.
Wow.
And so I think the lesson there is, you know, especially with what I do with sports, data is great, but there's also a lot of randomness involved.
Okay.
And our mind can play a lot of tricks with us in small sample sizes when we're looking at a small amount of things. And I think in terms of the business world, you know, you don't want to make too big a deal out of 100 samples of anything. You know, you really want to get bigger samples, and that's the kind of thing that you can trust more.
Got it. All right. So what made you decide that you were going to be the one to solve this problem of helping people look at analytics in the right way, and specifically applying it to sports?
Yeah. So I guess we should go back to the backstory about how this all happened. I mean, I have a PhD from Stanford, and I always thought I would be a professor and doing research, and that kind of ended abruptly at some point. And I was looking for something else to do, and it turned out that my background, I did my research in something called statistical physics, and that actually turns out to be a great background to study sports.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's a little bit of a disconnect, but a lot of the skills I was using, I was able to apply to ranking sports teams.
Okay.
And so what I do is I take data on games. So the simplest is I look at the margin of victory in games. I take all the data for the NFL season, for example, and then I run it through my algorithm, and it adjusts for strength of schedule. So it will say, okay, well, this team played a much harder schedule than another team. It will make adjustments for that. And so it was never what I thought I would do with my life. I've always been a sports fan, but I kind of always thought I would be doing something a little bit different. But I just, like I was saying before, I did some rankings. I sent an email to some friends, and they just kind of encouraged me to go along, and that just kind of continued, and here I am today.
Wow, that's a good story. That's a really good story, and it just goes to show you how sometimes we think we're going to go down one path in life, and we end up in a totally different place, and that's not bad.
That's right.
It's just right. The way life happens.
That's right.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about your journey as an entrepreneur, because I imagine that's very different from academia.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
What would you say was or has been the biggest mindset barrier that you've had to deal with, and how have you overcome it, if you've overcome it yet?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any one particular barrier. I mean, you definitely talked about how academia is so different from owning your own business. I think it's just a gradual process of change. You know, so I remember, for example, like one of the first blog posts I wrote was very dense and long sentences and huge paragraphs and just very unreadable. And it was the type of thing that an academic would write because they want to make their paper as difficult to read as possible. Because for some reason, that's a good thing. And my wife is like, this is not good. Write in shorter sentences, you know, do something better. And, you know, I did, and I changed a little bit. And then so that was better. And then I started reading Copy Blogger. And I was like, oh, okay. This makes sense. This is how you want to, you know, you want to just the whole concept that you want to write in shorter paragraphs because it's easier for people to scan, and it's easier for people to follow along, and long paragraphs are bad. And And then the next step of the process was getting into John Morrow's guest. So yeah, you join the guest blogging program and you learn more about how to write, you know, and you learn more about the Morrow opening and how you want to say the thoughts of your reader back to you and what their questions are. And I just think it's just this gradual process from becoming an academic to a business owner. And I mean, there's a lot of things, and I want to talk a little bit later about, you know, you can't really be stubborn. I think stubbornness is the biggest obstacle to being an entrepreneur.
Right.
But it's kind of a constant learning process. And I mean, you know, there's a tons of other examples, but that's just one of them about the transition.
Got it. So speaking of your customer, you know, so your background obviously is in data, but then more statistical analysis. How have you worked to stay in tune with your customer on more of the quantitative level? Because like as you're thinking about writing blog posts, that's less sometimes about the numbers and more about like their emotions and feelings. So how do you get in contact with that side of your customer to know what it is that they need to hear from you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's both objective and subjective. I mean, you know, objectively, it's definitely looking at data. It's looking at open rates and click-through rates on emails and things like that, just like what everyone do. But also the subjective, just, you know, reading every email and replying to the ones that are worth replying to, like reading every tweet and replying to each tweet. I think just, you know, listening and, you know, every once in a while asking, you know, what do you like, what do you not like. I don't think I have really any tricks. I just try to listen.
That's all right. There's no need to have any tricks. There's no sort of magic bullet that gets everything done, right?
Right.
All right. So tell me a little bit about the habits that you have. Is there any one or suite of habits that you have that enable you to be more productive and to get things done?
I think, you know, I'm kind of a marathon runner instead of a sprinter. Like I like to just kind of peck away at things every day. That's kind of how I get things done. So I'm working on some member content right now, and I don't know, I just kind of work at it every day, and it doesn't write itself immediately, but I just think, you know, I guess I'm not one of those types that can do a launch and work 24 hours a day for a week and
then crash.
And do that. Yeah, I'm just not that. I'm just not that kind of person. I just think kind of persistence and waking up every morning, excited about what you're doing, and steady progress towards your goal.
Okay.
And now, you know, as my business has developed, it's been, you know, 5-6 years now, kind of having a process. So understanding the process of what happens every year and just kind of sticking to that. Okay. I think that's kind of my best habit.
Awesome. Well, what would you say is your overall superpower when it comes to doing your business and running it and building and growing it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really it. Kind of the long-term process. You know, for example, one of my kind of long-term visions is just, you know, how do you use sports as motivation to get people to try to understand analytics and data and mathematics? And, you know, one of the model books is Freakonomics. So it was a book by Stephen Dubner that looked at simple phenomena and how you could use a mountain of data to try to understand those simple phenomena and kind of the counterintuitive things that came about that. And, I mean, the book was brilliant because it wasn't wordy in any kind of way. Like it was all like meat, and there was just a lot of just interesting things what they did. And to really do something like that, you really have to work at something for a long time. And I'm not talking months, I'm talking about years. And so I guess I have a willingness to kind of work at things for years and not kind of get dissuaded from that. Like I'm still really interested in kind of writing the sports version of Freakonomics and showing people how, you know, sports can be a good motivation and we can find a lot of counterintuitive things. And, you know, I started talking about this 3 or 4 years ago and now I finally have maybe half the content that would go in there and I'm still working towards it and maybe it'll happen one day. So.
No, I definitely like that long-term view. Did you always have that or was that something that you've had to sort of cultivate?
I think I've always had that.
Okay.
You know, one of the reasons I'm no longer in academia is because I kind of wanted to take that same approach and no one was really having it.
Okay.
It's a very, you know, it's a pretty intense world. I don't think people understand how intense like the research environment it is, and you got to publish or perish, and that means like there's a paper count that you do every year, and I didn't want to do that. You know, I wanted more deeper things, and I wanted to solve real problems instead of just writing papers that, you know, people may or may not read. And I was stubborn about that, and that's a huge reason why I failed in that line of work. And not that I'm sad about that in any way. I'm a lot happier doing what I'm doing now, but I guess there was a stubbornness trying to do that. I guess I've always been like that, first, to answer your question, and that has failed me before.
No, I think the really interesting part of that is your stubbornness got you out of a career path that wasn't suited for you. But in the one that you're in now, you're much happier, but you say that you can't be stubborn to make this one succeed. So it's kind of just, Right. It's good. No, it's a great part of the evolution that you do need to be stubborn about designing the life that you want, but Right. And doing the things that you need to do to get that life, you can't be stubborn
right.
about
exactly.
what you need to do. So yeah, it's a great, yep. great point. All right, so tell us about one failure that you've had in your business and what you learned from it.
One failure.
Actually, I want to change that question. Sorry.
Okay.
Just because I'm watching our time here. Okay. You ready?
Yep.
All right. So you do a lot of the work, I imagine, on your own. Do you do all the statistical analysis?
I do.
So
yeah. So I work by myself. Yep.
Okay, so because most of your work, much of your work is by yourself, where do relationships play into your business and what you need to do to build and grow it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think relationships are important. Mm-hmm. I'm not particularly great at that. I mean, I do think I'm personable and I can talk to people. But it has also occurred to me recently that I made an active choice to have kind of a solitary business. Like I pick something that I can do a lot of the analysis myself.
Right.
I really enjoy the writing, which is also another solitary endeavor. And, you know, one of the books that really influenced me in my life was Atlas Shrugged. And I do not kind of condone any of the politics that's associated with the author of that, but it was a book about kind of how humans are the fountain of progress and individual solitary effort. And, you know, I read that a long time ago, and I kind of come to realize recently how much of an effect that has had. But obviously you can't run a business in a vacuum, and you know, to kind of show the evolution of the thinking from academia to business. Like when I first started my business, I was like, oh, I don't need to talk to people anymore. I'm just working on a business. And I threw out some books about, you know, I think it was like Robert Greene's 48 Laws of Power. It's like, I don't need this anymore, which couldn't be further from the truth. It's just kind of embarrassing that I did that. But you know, kind of on a day-to-day level, like I try to keep mornings open for doing research, doing writing, and then I try to keep afternoons open for talking to sweet people like Sonia Thompson and emails and the other things. So, you know, I don't feel like I'm great. I don't feel like I'm super, you know, very good. Definitely not my strength in terms of kind of networking and stuff, but it's definitely an important part of any business.
Definitely. All right. So speaking of your schedule, how did you find a schedule that worked for you? Because I think a lot of people struggle with how to mm-hmm. organize and structure their day. Like, how did you realize sure. that the morning should be for certain things and the afternoon for different activities?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as I've gotten older, I've kind of become, I mean, not really a morning person, but, like, I feel like I do my best work in the morning. So I try to do my best thinking then, outlining, writing, research, and, you know, I guess I'm good. I'm kind of useless during the middle of the day around lunch.
Okay.
And then I kind of pick it up again, you know, in terms of like really deep thinking, like kind of late in the afternoon, like 4 to 6.
Okay.
But obviously, you know, if you need to take care of business things from that start at 2 and end till 6, then that's probably the better time to get that done. So it's just what works best for me.
Got it. All right. Well, Ed, this has been super fascinating. Thank you so much for stopping by. What would you say are your 3 keys to success that you've learned over these past 5 to 6 years? Because that's a long time.
Yeah.
Entrepreneur world.
Yeah, I think persistence in terms of just, you know, knowing something's not going to get done in a day. Just being able to wake up every morning and work a little bit towards your goals and eventually have something that's fantastic. I think you need to be able to change with the times. I think I mentioned earlier, I think stubbornness is kind of the death knell for entrepreneurs. You just cannot be stubborn. I'll give you one example from my business. I started out in sports analytics, and after a couple years, it was very obvious that gamblers were interested in this. And had I not kind of accepted that, I don't know what I'd be doing. I mean, I guess I would still be doing something, but I had to adopt that you know, these were the people that were going to pay me, and that was what allows my business to be where it is today. And then, you know, I'd say the third thing is just you got to constantly learn. You have to be open to learning new things. And, you know, this just reminds me, you actually asked about a movie quote later, and I want to get to there right now, because Good Will Hunting is one of my favorite movies. And there's this scene where Matt Damon is tells this Harvard student, like, well, you dropped $150K on a education that you could have had on $1.50 on late fines in the library. And I think that kind of epitomizes, like, just you just need to constantly learn. It doesn't have to be a formal education. It's you learn through reading books, you learn through watching movies, you learn through having experiences. You learn to go into conferences and meeting cool other people. Just you need to always keep learning, and you should never stop.
Definitely, definitely. All right, do you have any parting words of wisdom for entrepreneurs who are working hard, trying to make their business dream come true as they serve their customers?
Yeah, absolutely. I got one thing I've been thinking about. When you're starting out, don't work too hard. I mean, you're always like so fired up about like what you're doing, and it doesn't seem like you're going anywhere, because that's just the nature of business. It's like you can't build Rome in a day,
right?
And you end up really kind of killing yourself because that's what you're fired up about. I don't know if you've had the same experiences, and only later do you realize, like, well, and the thing is, you end up doing things that aren't necessarily helping your business, mm-hmm. right? You end up doing things that aren't helping your business, and you'd be better off just, you know, going and watch a movie with your wife for the night. And it's, I don't know, maybe it's almost impossible to kind of be in the moment and really trying to start something new and to realize that it would be better to just not work quite as hard. But I would guess that a lot of entrepreneurs have that problem where they're working way too hard in the beginning. And oftentimes it's better just to chill a little bit.
Yeah. I agree with you, because I think sometimes hard work is touted as like the thing that you need to do. Right. So it's kind of a badge of honor, but sure. You're not completely productive if you're working like 12, 14 exactly. hours a day consistently. And in the beginning, you do need a lot of doing, but you also need a lot of strategic thinking. And to be able to effectively think strategically, your exactly. mind needs to be rested and clear.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, you know, I think that's almost exactly what I did when I quit my government job. I was like, all right, well, I need to bang this as hard as possible, and I need to do all this stuff. And, you know, I just feel like I was like, what was I doing? Like, I was writing a lot of blog posts, which were fine, but they weren't really driving my business. You know, it was more like kind of short-term stuff and not, you know, good kind of cornerstone content, which is what now I would do
right.
if I had to do it over again. But I was spending like 12 hours a day and working nights and stuff and trying to just do stuff that wasn't affecting the bottom line. And it's just, it's hard not to. Maybe this is where good coaches come in, but, you know, you do need to work hard. And I'm certainly not saying being lazy, but you can definitely overwork kind of in those early stages.
Yeah. Yeah. And that can be just as hard, just as harmful as not working hard enough.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Ed, this has been great. I love this discussion. Thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having
your experiences. This has been great.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Ed had so many great things to share, but there was one thing that stood out to me in particular, and that brings us to today's I Am the One challenge. As you're working to get your business off the ground, it can be tempting to work a ton of hours trying to get everything done. But at times that can be counterproductive, especially if you aren't putting your energy on tasks that actually grow your business. So to make sure you don't overwork yourself, decide what is the ideal amount of hours you'd like to devote each week working on your business. When you know in advance how much time you like to work, it becomes easier to put a schedule in place that helps you stick to it. It might even help you be more productive as a result. Once you've got your answers, head on over to iamtheone.fm/5 and get signed up for the free mini course, The 5 Things Successful Entrepreneurs Focus On. Until next time, keep working on building your dream business so you can make life better. Somebody's waiting on you. Thanks for listening.